The year was 167 CE, and the legions of Rome stood on the frozen banks of the Vistula, buried under the weight of winter's grip. The land was a vast expanse of white, and the wind, sharp and unforgiving, bit at their skin. The soldiers shuffled through the snow like men already half dead, wondering what, if anything, they were still fighting for. They were tired, demoralized, starved, and at the brink of a cold death, not in a metaphorical way, but in the most brutal, literal sense of the word. But the already worn-out, freezing soldiers were about to discover something that, even after almost 3,000 years, still holds true. Bad can always get worse. And so, their worst nightmares became a bitter reality, when the enemy tribes remembered another, even older truth, that the enemy of my enemy is my temporary best friend. And they became exactly that, temporary best friends. Their hatred for each other wasn't remotely comparable to the hatred they felt for the starving Romans, so they merged their scattered, savage forces into a single, relentless army against the men who were already stretched to their breaking point. And at the head of an almost broken Roman army stood the unbroken Tiberius Claudius, the bravest of all, the hero of this story, our beacon of hope. The man the history books remember as a figure of unwavering bravery and courage, a commander whose name carried the weight of victories past. And the list goes on and on. But that's what the history books said, because history books never dare to point out the obvious truths of the human soul, the fragile thread that connects us all, yet we so often try to hide. Whether you were a high-ranking Roman officer, a weakened, starved soldier about to be sacrificed on the battlefield, or even the enemy and their enemies who had just become allies, we all fear death. Or perhaps more accurately, we all fear the uncertainties of life. And Tiberius? He was no exception. He was afraid, terrified even, anxious and exhausted, and had likely forgotten what he was even fighting for. Yet, like all men history places on pedestals, he had no choice but to keep his cool. It was a necessity as a leader. He didn't need to add more worries to the almost frozen soldiers, nor did he want to contradict the history books. But beneath that cold, unflinching exterior, there was a longing that pulsed through his every move. More than likely, like everyone in this story, he longed for peace. An elusive, almost mythical desire that no one understands better than those who have lost it, or those who have spent a lifetime searching for it. But you don't need to be a starving, slur, frostbitten Roman soldier, or a famous officer trying to save face to understand what it feels like not to have peace. You don't need to be caught in the freeze of a battlefield to know what it's like to be captured by anxiety, to feel trapped in the solitude of your own thoughts. The uncertainty of life, its crushing weight, can leave you feeling just as lost as Tiberius, fighting battles you can't see, trying to hold it all together while the world crumbles beneath your feet. But there's something more, because in the end, there is also the real battle against reality itself. The unforgiving drudgery of the world outside, indifferent to our longing for peace, waits for no one. It doesn't care about our struggles, our fears, or the peace we so desperately seek. But unlike many pessimists, myself included, often believe, peace, like truth, is not some unattainable utopia. It's not a distant dream, like perfect beauty or unwavering happiness. Some things are simply well hidden in plain sight. And history, both the recorded and the off the record, shows us that there are those who have found it. Figures like Siddhartha Gautama, Mahatma Gandhi, or the Buddha, and even Jesus Christ, each of whom reached a state of peace, or nirvana, or whatever you choose to call it. And if we're speaking of those who have touched that elusive peace, we must not forget the very heart of our story, the struggles and fears of the weakened, frozen Roman army. At the head of them all, leading them to victories and deaths, is a name that still echoes through history, Marcus Aurelius. A man who sought peace for his country yet never saw his dream come true. A man who, despite a long record of war, betrayals and losses, of countless battles fought, friendships broken, and the relentless toll the years of conflict had taken on his soul, somehow found that elusive sense of serenity and peace. The very peace that everyone in this story, the frozen soldiers, the enemies and their allies, and even us at this point, is longing for. Marcus Aurelius had uncovered that secret, the very piece that Tiberius is so desperately searching for. But Tiberius didn't learn about the peace Marcus Aurelius had cultivated from a history book. No, he knew him personally. He knew that this peace wasn't just a facade, a mask worn to endure the brutal facts of reality. Marcus's peace was genuine. Tiberius knew him deeply, better than anyone else, perhaps even better than a brother. They had fought side by side through countless battles, both bearing wounds, both mourning the loss of friends. And unlike love, which can be fleeting or fragile, the bond forged in suffering is unbreakable. And as if he didn't have enough to worry about, with his men freezing to death, the lack of resources and the enemy tribes uniting into a formidable force, Tiberius found himself grappling with a far more personal question. How was it possible that his compadre, Marcus Aurelius, the Emperor of Rome, could remain so composed and collected in the face of it all? How could a man, burdened with the weight of an empire, carry so much peace within him? How was it that, despite the chaos closing in from every side, he wasn't losing his mind? The more Tiberius pondered this, the more it haunted him. It was a question that gnawed at his thoughts, keeping him awake through sleepless nights and endless marches, until finally, on the eve of the Battle of the Vistula, Tiberius, weary and worn, made a decision. He walked straight to Marcus Aurelius's chambers and asked him, "How do you do it? How do you find peace, my lord? After all the battles we've fought, after all the death we've seen, how can you remain so calm, so unbothered?" Marcus looked at his brother thoughtfully. They had been through much together, and he could understand perfectly the internal conflict of a man wounded deep in his soul. So with the familiarity they shared, he simply said, "Come, Tiberius, I'll show you." Marcus Aurelius led Tiberius into his chambers, and there he unveiled a painting, one that seemed strikingly out of place. Tiberius stepped forward, but as soon as he saw the image, his confusion only deepened. It was a grotesque depiction, a dead tree, its gnarled branches stretching like skeletal hands, standing in the center of a desolate battlefield. The ground beneath it was littered with the scattered corpses of forgotten warriors, and a violent storm raged overhead, as though nature itself were enraged at the very existence of what had once been. It was no symbol of peace, no serene image. Instead, it felt like a raw, visceral reminder of chaos, fear, suffering, and the futility of years of conflict. Tiberius stood motionless for a moment, feeling, perhaps for the first time in his life, truly defeated. The weight of the image pressed against his heart and his hopes for peace. It was like a mirror reflecting the turmoil that constantly deflated his soul. He felt like that dead tree, lifeless, battered by the storm, surrounded by unending war and uncertainty. This was not peace. It was the very embodiment of his fears and struggles, a grim reminder of the fate awaiting him and his tired, frozen men on the battlefield tomorrow. "I'm sorry, my lord," he said, "but this doesn't bring me peace. How could something like this give you the calm you've shown all these years?" Marcus looked at him with a profound calm and care that no history book could ever fully convey, and peacefully said, "Look closer at the painting, dear brother," pointing toward a joint between the branches of the tree. "Look, over there," he said again. "And there, in the heart of that horrifying chaos, in the midst of the wreckage and the storm, there it was. A single bird, sitting in complete stillness on her nest, protecting her young beneath her wings. Despite the death and destruction surrounding her, the bird was doing what she could to protect her young, in a perfect peace that I'm not fit to describe. It was a simple promise of life, not after the storm, but right in the middle of it. I know tomorrow's battles will be difficult, and the tomorrow after that will be difficult as well. I can promise you that. But rest assured, my dear brother, peace doesn't come from surviving battles or conquering the entire world. Peace comes from looking beneath the wings of your heart and seeing there what's truly worth fighting for."